Welcome to the first of three episodes of the special series about the European Youth Event 2023. Today, we will talk about data protection, one of the topics discussed during the activity promoted by the Science Communication Network at the European Parliament in Strasbourg. During our activity in Strasbourg, we explored the difficulties in the dialogue between scientists and policymakers and how those difficulties can be overcome with the help of science communicators. And to start the discussion, we had the opportunity to hear Maria da Graça Carvalho, a Portuguese MEP at the European Parliament, who shared her views on the current challenge of data protection, data economy and digital transformation, concentrating on the European Parliament and institutions. Reflections about policymaking connected with the topic discussed throughout this special series, data protection, health literacy and climate change. Let's start.
Hello everyone, my name is Maria da Graça Carvalho and I'm a Portuguese member of the European Parliament, and I'm here to say a few words about my work, and I will concentrate in a recent work about the data economy and the data strategy. The data economy represents 2.6% of the GDP of the European Union. It is the basis for many new digital products and services, in particular for developing artificial intelligence applications and the Internet of Things, what we call the IoT devices. IoT is one of the key technologies enabling the digital transformation, as the ability of the devices to sense and transmit data brings companies considerable benefits. Overall, data is a critical resource for startups and SMEs. But only a small part of the industrial data is accessible and is used today in an effective way. 80% of industrial data is never used, and we should find ways to exploit this potential while respecting intellectual property rights of the industrial players. The potential for growth and the potential for innovation is enormous. The European legislation already deals with many aspects of the digital world. I could mention the GDPR, the Open Data Directive, the Digital Services Act, DSA, the Digital Markets Act, DMA, and the recent the Data Governance Act. So in certain way, the Data Act was the missing link in this holistic strategy. The Data Act can create a more agile data economy by enabling easier access to almost an infinite amount of high quality industrial data derived particularly from those generate devices linked to the internet. The regulation that we have in front of us aims to clarify, in particular, the rights of access and the use of data and databases to facilitate voluntary sharing of data by individuals and by business, to harmonize the conditions for the use of public sector data, and to improve the cloud switching process and the framework. So, in February of last year, 2022, the European Commission published the proposal for the Data Act. And we are now, in the European Parliament, in the final stage of the regulations. So we are negotiating between the European Parliament, the Council and the Commission. I am a negotiator for the European People's Party group in the committee INCO, the Consumers Protection and Internal Market Committee. And I had the opportunity to introduce several important amendments to this law. And in this short address, I want to focus in particular in an aspect that I find very important, the cloud computing. Cloud services are an essential element for using available data and the adoption of related technologies accelerating across Europe. Today, the market is dominated by US and Chinese platforms. Amazon, Microsoft, and Google alone have a market over 70%. These companies determine what can be done in the cloud and when it can be used. These operators offer in Europe around 85% of cloud computing service in the European Union. European suppliers end up limiting themselves to smaller and more specific niche market. This problem goes beyond competition issues, and the future technologies of the 21st century, such as artificial intelligence, connect industrial manufacturing, telemedicine, mobility, autonomous mobility, smart cities, and digital administration. They are all based on the availability of cloud computing infrastructure. This is why Europeans are looking for ways to have a say in shaping on a very important digital infrastructures, that is the cloud infrastructure. An example of this effort is the recent project Gaia-X, developed by companies and the research institutions. In the European Parliament, we are also aware of these problems. In my report, I introduced change to improve this question, and also the data portability, increase the fluidity of the cloud market, and increase the confidence of the integrity of related services. A way to address barriers that voluntary codes of conduct and other agreements between market players have not been able to remove so far. For example, to ensure that supplier switching process runs efficiently, using proactive collaboration from all parties involved without excessive costs to the users. Given the horizontal nature of this regulation, this has an impact in a lot of sectors beyond cloud computing. The data economy matters to everyone because it is present and will increasingly tremendous in all sectors of activity. So it's because of that that is so important to Europe to be present in the cloud market. It is therefore essential the confirmation of the European Union as a great international power in digital domain. Thank you very much.
With these insights and ideas by the MEP Maria Carvalho, we are able to retain the importance of using data in some key areas of society, as well the potential that the amount of data enables greater innovation and growth of data protection policies. The regulation of the Data Act, for instance, in the European Union, is considered an important example not only for the relevance it entails, but above all for the participation of experts and society in a robust implementation of this type of policy. Now, let's listen to the conversation that Andrea had with one of the participants present in our activity during I-2023, Felso.
Hello, everyone. With us today, we have Felso Gagnani, who was a participant at iWorkshop facilitated by the Science Network Pod. And thank you, Felso, for being here today. Would you like to present yourself to everyone who's listening to us today?
Sure. Thank you for having me. Hello, everyone. My name is Felso Gagnani, as Andrea already said. It's a pleasure for me to be here. I would like to start by saying that it was a very nice experience overall to be a part of the European Youth event, and especially to be a part of your workshop with the Science Communication Network. Thank you very much for that.
Thank you. I know this is under a cliche, but these events don't happen without the participants and the people engaging. So Thank you. So we mentioned, I mentioned a workshop. In the workshop, we discussed mainly three topics, like the policy, climate change, and health literacy. And today we're going to discuss a little bit the workshop, and you can tell our listeners which topic would you like to approach today.
Sure. All three topics were sensitive for me. And I'm very interested in all of them, but I will definitely focus on the one that I worked on during the workshop, which was data policy, because we had a deep analysis. We made a deep analysis on the topic, and we discussed it with property. Yes, I will definitely go for data policy.
Wonderful. And what do you think at the moment are the key challenges in the topic? You can mention some you discussed or new ones, but for you, what do you think we should focus on when discussing data policy?
So, a fun fact that actually happened during our discussions within the group, which was composed by, if I'm not mistaken, six young people ranging from the ages of 18 to 26, was the fact that none of us, me included, have the habit of reading the cookies policy and the data privacy policy upon entering a website or any other thing on the digital environment. We do not have the habit to do so. And at the same time, the whole group showed concerns such as they said that they needed to have more control of their data, first of all, which makes sense because we as young people and as people that like the sense of freedom that we, or people that would like the sense of freedom or the right of freedom that we enjoy offline to be online, we would definitely like to have more of, I would say, control into what companies, or I would say tech companies, have or access in within our data. And at the same time, while we recognize, while we see the need for those kind of things to happen, which is giving more control to the person that accesses the website or the accesses the online feed or content. At the same time, we recognize that there are a lot of difficulties and challenges into it, because up until now, we do not see much of a user-friendly way of passing these policies, to say, and we discussed this as well. Companies usually invest a lot of money on turning their websites or their products online user-friendly. And one of our remarks was, why not having a user-friendly explanation, a more user-friendly explanation of the data policy, of the cookies policy, meaning instead of having large lists, of article, blah, 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 we could have a cool way of communicating it on which people would have less text and maybe more diagrams on how is it going to be used, what are the purposes, and all these things, in order to make it easier for the person on the other side, just trying to decide what kind of fate, I mean, their data should have, to do it in a more accurate and informed way. So that was one of the takeaways that I had, and that was very, very interesting, because I think that it's very important not only to make the products user-friendly, but also this very important part, which is data policy, user-friendly as well. So yeah, I think that's it.
I remember when we were in the session, you were in groups, discussed, and then you came back with a point. And I remember you saying that, like, the group saying, yes, but we have information there, but accessible is making, is it understandable? Is it, so no one's going to read it, of course. It's like, we're running everywhere.
It's boring.
And, yeah. It's like, and I don't think my mom's going to read it. And I think my young cousin who now has a phone is going to read it. How to make it accessible, like, or diagrams. And I remember, like, listening to you thinking, of course that makes all sense. Why are not doing this? I think the question is like, I'm sure people know it's not accessible. So why are we doing it actually?
Precisely. And I recently came, ever since I happened and I had that opportunity of getting into that group and having all that brainstorming about the topic, I then went into researching and trying to find solutions to this problem. And actually there are some, I would say, social enterprises. They're not really companies trying to profit. They're just working with the purpose of making data more user-friendly. And so there are some that I cannot really mention right now because their names are a bit far from my mind, but I know that there are some social enterprises already working on this topic. And so it's something that is visibly on top of the table. It's important for everyone, but in particular for younger generations, it's a very important thing. And I believe that the EU as a whole should take this into their own hands and make sure that this is not, I would say, there is no choice into this. To say, if you just tell the companies, maybe you should make it more accessible, they will not do it. So I believe that we need regulations, we need new directives that will at least make the companies try and do a better job on it. On a progressive way, it will not happen instantly, but I would say that progressively we should try to get to the point where data policy upon arrival in a website is more user-friendly so that the person doesn't get lost.
I agree. And I have to say, I wrote down something you just said minutes ago, which I think is wonderful. You said, I don't know if it was this exact words, but the right of the freedom on offline to online. Because we have to have an online presence somehow. If you're applying to a job, probably have LinkedIn, and then someone asks you this platform, doing research. So you have an online presence. And this concept of having the same freedom offline and online, I just find it amazing. I just want to highlight it. And going a little bit back to the AI, you, as you said, you were in a group with different experience. How was it? How was that experience?
So, overall, it was really, really, really nice to work with such a diverse and diversified group, because, as I said before, we were six people, if I'm not mistaken, ranging from the ages of 16 up until 26. And so you had people that were born in the early 2000s. And people that were born in 1996 or late 1990s, which was my case. And so for me, initially, it was actually a learning experience, which I always try to approach every discussion with. And so it was interesting for me to learn from them in terms of, okay, I have my own opinions about this topic, but it's really, really interesting to hear them up and see that even though sometimes we try, or out there we try to showcase that young people are not interested or are not as interested as their predecessors were with their age, it's interesting to see that they actually care about these things. Maybe they don't know what are the right channels with which to reach the right people and to try and act over these issues. But on that occasion, I saw that these are also pressing issues for them. And so it was really, really, really interesting to see that from a young age, a very young age, we could find people that were already worried about pressing issues of our society and were willing to act on those issues. And that was strikingly impressive for me in a very positive way, because I believe that it's not about age, it's about it's not even worrying, it's about caring. As long as you care about something that is important for you, you're going to act on it. And it takes courage first to recognize. First of all, you have to pay attention, yes, but then it takes courage to act on the things that you believe that are important for you. And for me, it was really, really, really nice to see that more young people are getting involved in these discussions and are on the table, would like to be more involved on the decision-making process of these pressing issues that are important for them. And that was really, really interesting to see.
That's also interesting to hear. I'm just thinking that we tend to wait in experience, which we should. But I also think new generations bring energy, and we need a little bit of both. And even if, of course, if you're just starting college, you don't have the answers, but you have the questions. That's as much as important as having the answers or means to the answers.
Maybe the most important thing, actually. Yeah. I might not have the answer to every problem, but as long as I know that I'm making the right questions, I'm okay with that, because I believe that collectively we can get to the right answers, but it all starts with asking the right questions. And we cannot do that separately and individually. We have to come together and draw raise the questions up see which pains we share, to say, and work out the pain relievers, to say, of our issues. And at the end of the day, it's about at the end of the day, we might find out that we have a lot of commonalities about the pressing issues that each and every one of us experiences. And so, the right questions are always a good start. We don't have to have every answers.
Well, I hope the younger generation that are hearing today's episode got that. And if you're feeling down, come back to this episode and remember these words.
I hope so as well. And it's been really a pleasure for me to be here.
We have one more question, which I told you is a little bit of a surprise, talking about the future. So in 10 years, what would you like to see? What change? It doesn't have to be like a policy. Like, what in the world do you think, like, in 10 years, I really hope this is where we're at. This is what you would like to be seen accomplished.
So in 10 years, I would really like to see the very ambitious targets on climate change that were set to within 10 years will be past 2030. And so by 2033, I would really like to see a lot of the targets, the ambitious targets that were set for 2030, already reached. and also see the world collectively. And I will press on that because it's very important that we leave no one behind. But I would like to see the world collectively moving towards the net zero point that we all want to get to, because climate change doesn't choose the population based on the region where it affects, based on the color of the skin of the people of the people in that particular place. It doesn't choose based on religious background or anything like that. And so we have to first of all recognize that it's a problem that affects everyone, and it will not be I would say defeated or slowed down if we do not act collectively, because a threat somewhere in some part of the world that we might not even know, it is a threat to us as well, because at the end of the day, we share one home, which is the planet, and we have to take care of it collectively. So that's where I would say that I would love to see the world going to within 10 years.
I'll share this with you, dear. I hope so too. Also, it's been a pleasure. Thank you so much. Say anything, feel free to.
Well, I would like to actually share another fun fact, which I only learned because of the European Youth event, which was how the decision-making process is made at the European Council. Because I didn't know, I had no clue before I got there, and I was a minister for a day, because we had this I would say role play session, and we actually voted and compromised on a problem that we had on the top of the agenda. But the most interesting thing for me was finding out that in order to be passed the vote on the voting process, in order to have a qualified majority, 55% of the EU member states have to vote for that specific, let's say, proposal. And that 55% of EU member states have to represent 65% of the population of the EU, which at the time involved a lot of, it made us think mathematically, like, how are we going to do it? And so it made the negotiation process a whole challenging thing. It took it to the next level. But it was also interesting to see that at the end of the day, we just wanted what was better for all of us. And it was really interesting to see that there is that kind of negotiation where even though you share differences, you try and come together to compromise on things that make sense for everyone and will benefit everyone. On a very fair way, I would say. So that was interesting.
That's a very heartwarming way of wrapping up. Thank you so much. I hope to have you back soon, and wish you a great day.
Thank you for having me, Andrea. Thank you very much, and all the best.
One of the most important things for Svelsu that occurred during the group debate was that none of the participants attending had ever read or had the habit of reading the information about the cookies. He pointed out the attention that we should have regarding our data. Now we are going to listen to the opinion of another participant, Margarida, who in a conversation with me had the chance to mention problems and possible solutions to the issue of data protection.
I am with Margarida Rodrigues, one of the participants of the European Youth Event 2023, with whom we had the opportunity to share insights from the activity carried out by the Science Communication Network. Margarida, which topic would you like to discuss and why of those that were on the agenda in our activity in the European Parliament, global warming, data policy, or healthy literacy?
First, good morning, Bruno. Thank you for having me. The topic that I like to discuss more, it was data policy, because it was the one that I discussed in the dynamic, in the activity of group. And when you were talking about the three subjects, it was the topic that I didn't know a lot of things, actually, that I don't think about, that I didn't think about often in my day-to-day life, that I sound some for me, it was something like very complicated and complex that I didn't have to think about. So it was very important that you gave us the information and the opportunity to think more in more depth about this this subject. So it was that one that made me think until this day. I am more aware of the implications of data policy.
And what do you think are the important challenges in this particular field?
So, because I didn't, as I was telling you, because I didn't know a lot about this, I really think the most important thing is to bring information to the general public, and especially more clarified and simple information so that everybody can understand, and not only understand, for example, when we clicked in the accepting websites, but more important to, I'm sorry, I have a blank, but I will go back right now, not only understand, but also know the implications that these have in our lives, and where is this information going? Who is benefit with this information? So I think it's very important then to be aware of this, and to not everybody understand the language. I don't think even the design, that was something that we discussed in a group, even the designs of the websites, often like we have like the click, it's so easy to click and accept. It's much more difficult to click and decline when we have the cookies and all those things. So, to make change, so we can have we can make decisions more aware and clarify all the implications. I'm sorry if I'm being repetitive.
And after the event, how did your perception change in this particular field or another?
Yeah, in all of them, yeah, I was thinking more about this one, especially because the others was also two subjects that I already know and I was a little bit more aware. So, but it was important also to listen to the other groups and to understand what they are saying. Especially, my take back was a lot of the people were talking about this information. I think a lot about what your association is trying to, or your project is trying to bring to the people, like more democratic communication, so everybody can understand. So it is easier to make to just be more critical about things, even if you're it's so you can make your own decisions with good information and not trying to and not be so easy to persuade, or in a bad way, persuade or manipulate you in a bad way. So I think to be very aware that you have to know more, and that you have to bring information in a more clarified way to a bigger number of people. I'm sorry.
And in 10 years, what changes would you like to see implemented?
Going back again to, especially in data policy, because it was the thing that it was in my mind, more in a more focused way, legislation. So the companies that take care of our data and that benefit from that have more strict policies, and they cannot do anything only for benefits or to make money, and without us not knowing or not be so aware of all this. And I'm sorry to say this word a lot, but I think it was my main take of all this. It was like, oh my God, I'm not thinking about this subject that have a lot of influence on my day-to-day life. and also in the future and right now. So it's maybe that, like, I really was I really wish to see more legislation that can bring more boundaries to these companies and all of this.
One last question, Margarida. I know that education component is very important in your academic and professional path. What are the challenges for you, and what can be done so that this area becomes a prime concern for society and for political decision makers?
Yes, I really think that I'm thinking what I can do, because it's so easy to say what the politics should do or all these other agents, and we have really to start by us. So as a teacher, like, don't wait for that something about these subjects will be inserted in the curriculum, and just start to talk about them, because in our classroom we can decide what we should talk. And I think it's really important that we start in a very young age, so the students know about these topics, know about how they can how to protect themselves also against wrong informations, and stimulating them a critical thinking. I think that's one of the most important things. And just bring these subjects to the classroom, because that's the start of all. Society is born in the classroom. So it's very important that you have a central space in those places.
To finish, one more question: what you thought of the whole I event?
Okay, first for me, and maybe for all, I don't know, I hope so, it was very important to have the opportunity to work to participate in the so many group dynamics or activities that were organized by projects or associations like yours, even talking about very different subjects, because I, as you say before, I went more with the project was in relation with education, because it was my field. And it was so important to see what other people are doing in other parts of Europe. This is my experience as Portuguese. What is your experience as Spanish or as a Romanian or whatever? It was that that sharing of experiences, and all of us together talking and maybe find some solutions, or thinking about solutions, even if we cannot do all by ourselves, but like, what can I do and what we can do together. So I think the most important thing was that, like, I know this, you know that, so let's make this together and construct a better thing, and just trying to make these. I feel very privileged to be European, and I feel very privileged at my country, and I have the opportunity, or the opportunity, I don't know if it's the right term, but the right word, but to be born in this Portugal, if this Portugal before entering the European Union, because I have one of the things that I know, that I have a very different life of my parents was because of European Union. So I'm very aware of this, and feel that sentiment during all the it was very beautiful. I don't know if this is not a very this is a very emotional term, but it was what I was feeling. So I bring home a lot of new ideas, and especially more hope to the future. So that was in these times, I think it's very important. So it was a great experience.
Thank you, Margarida.
Thank you.
Following a bit of the idea presented by Felso, for Margarida, data protection and data policy never create a topic of curiosity. But this curiosity, so to speak, became more visible during the activity carried out during the I. Along that today, the in-depth and useful debate occurs. So, as has been clear in several other testimonies, for Margarida, literacy and education are possible solutions to these and other problems that happen in our society. Now, let's hear about the intervention of another Portuguese MEP, Carlos Zorrinho, on data protection.
Thank you for the opportunity to share with you some reflections that I hope will be useful for your work. Change has always been part of life, a change marked by the binomial energy information and by perceptions and values that determine actions. Today, this binomial is submitted to a brutal acceleration factor. As we learned in physics, nothing is lost, everything is transformed, but now everything transforms faster and faster. It is in this context that we need to develop European policies able to respond to the major challenges that humanity is facing: climate change and deep inequalities. I would like to underline the energy union and the successive packages that have emerged from it, and also the digital decade and the entire process of regulation and modernization that it involves. The twin strategies, energy transition and digital transition, require articulated policies at global, European, national, regional and local levels, but also empowerment and commitment of citizens. Besides the economic and technological dimension, the policies must have a strong social and participative dimension. I would therefore like to leave you with some challenges. In terms of the EU geopolitical positioning, on terms of climate justice, on terms of combating misinformation, and in terms of access to data in the new gigabyte society, and the capacity for self-determination and sovereignty in a free and decent society. In terms of geopolitical positioning, without sacrificing values, should we try to avoid a new world order based on blocks? I think so. What do you think? On climate justice, you want to lead the competitive decarbonization. We must compensate developing countries by giving them our technology and creating sustainable projects with them and in their territories. I think so. What do you think? On the plan of combating misinformation, should we prioritize the fight against info exclusion and the promotion of digital literacy? I think so. What do you think? In terms of access to data, digital regulation, and generative artificial intelligence, should we promote imagination, critical capacity, empathy, and self-regulation with strong democratic scrutiny? I think so. What do you think? I count on your proactive action for that, for to develop our extraordinary partnership of peace, sovereignty, and freedom, to remain a decent and dignified place for all those who want to live and be happy in it. Thank you very much.
With the idea presented by MEP Zorrinho that policies must have a strong social and participating dimensions, we will conclude with the opinion of Claudio Coelho, participant of I 2023, who was asked which topic she likes to discuss and why.
So to start with, I'd like to discuss the Data Act. As a frequent user of social networks, I feel that now more and more each day our rights as users should be protected and must be protected. That's why the European Commission is focusing on so many new policies to actually protect users when entering on this digital world because we are definitely on an era, digital era, and each time I just enter the location on my iPhone, for example, I know that I'm not the only one accessing to my data here. Anyone who can see my location, anyone who sees my location, knows who I am, can know immediately so many information about me just because I popped in on the location to use Google Maps on my iPhone. And I don't want strangers, I don't want random people to just enter my iPhone just to discover things about me and who I am. Of course, this sounds maybe a bit paranoid, but I don't know much about technology. I know just basic as a normal, regular user. But I feel that my rights should be as protected as the rights of, for example, any traveler who travels inside or outside the EU and, for example, has a flight cancelled and can just try to change a bit the situation, make a complaint and so on. So in these cases, I should be able to make a complaint also if someone hacks my phone, right? I should also be able to make a complaint. And I know that, of course, the European Commission and several other states all around the world are focusing on ensuring that users have their rights more protected. Surely we are always on facing new challenges because technology and iPhones and social medias and yeah, technology in general, they are always developing. There are always something new to be invented. There's always something new to be invented. So how can the European Commission, how can states adapt to these developments? This is what it doesn't concern me, but this is what makes me more curious to see what's coming next with all the, for example, Apple launches a new iPhone every year. So if policies need to and have to keep up with new launches, new developments on technology, policy and politicians need to be fast. And this is something that we are not used to see, right? We are not used to see people and politicians deciding and seeing eye to eye so fast. But of course, that's why all this curiosity and all these challenging developments, this is what makes me wonder what's going to happen next. And this is what I like to discuss, honestly.
What do you think are the important challenges in the field?
I see a big challenge on the data protection, which is the borderline, seeing a borderline between what is private and what is not. How do you perceive that it is private and it should be protected? What I do and when I overshare on my Instagram. So if my followers see, and followers and friends and everyone see that every day I post what I eat for breakfast, lunch and dinner, how do you see there that there's a breach or a disrespect regarding my private life when I am an oversharer? So yeah, this is a topic that I'm pretty confident is being discussed in many courts, and I know it is being discussed in the eyes of the law in many high entities, because we at this point cannot or have difficulties on perceiving what is one social life when we are so used to seeing open profiles sharing and oversharing what they do in their daily lives. And of course, so many people can take advantages on this, right? So yeah, I think this is a big challenge, and it's something I'm curious to see on how it will be developed, because one person with an open Twitter account, let's say, can share all his, her thoughts and can share everything regarding their daily routines, what they're doing, what they're not. And of course, if there's a breach of this private life, if there is someone taking or trying to take advantage on that, anyone can argue, hey, but yeah, that person was deserving it, right? Everything was overshared on social media. So yeah, we are so overwhelmed by what we share and that thought that, oh, it won't happen to me. It won't happen to me because I'm just sharing where I went on holidays to, so it won't happen to me. So yeah, we are so overwhelmed by the thought that we do forget that we have rights that need to be protected here. And yeah, if I share that I came on holidays to this certain place and I have a stalker who wants to just stalk me or just wants to take advantage of my empty house while I'm on holidays, social media will tell him or her everything. So yeah, this is definitely a challenge, and I'm pretty sure you agree with me.
And after the event, how did your perception change?
So right after the event, I definitely feel more informed about my rights as a user of technology, of course. So I'm definitely more informed. I am more also aware that I'm not alone, because there are more people interested on these topics who definitely want to fight for a change on data protection. And of course, like in a general way, after the event, I feel more into a community. Being there, I felt completely inside a community of young Europeans wanting to make a change, trying to have their voices heard in so many aspects, in so many of the conferences I went to. And yeah, definitely I felt inside a community there. Even though I've always felt that the European Union was very, very present on my daily routine and my day-to-day life. In fact, and this is just a funny thought, and this is something funny that I just feel like sharing. In fact, when I was returning from France after the event, I was flying from Lyon to Lisbon, and my flight got delayed for 3 hours. I was supposed to land in Lisbon at 7 p.m. I landed at around 11. So it was a huge delay. And of course, I was informed. I was aware of my rights. And I just did what every European should do. Every European, no, every person should do. I did a complaint. And I was right. Like, I just said, hi, I need to say something, because I was 3 hours delayed to get home. I had to go to work the day after. Imagine that I had other commitments. Imagine that I had a bus to take as any other passenger, because everyone was pissed, honestly, at that flight. But yeah, I just did a complaint and I was refunded. But this is just to say that the European Union works, and it really does wonders in terms of protecting your rights, and not only in terms of informing you of which steps you should take when it comes to overcoming certain situations or contributing to a better world, definitely.
Finally, what changes would you like to see implemented in 10 years?
The Data Act must seriously develop in 10 years or more, because really, as I said before, this is a constant and constantly changing topic. Technologies are evolving each day, each hour, not even each week or each month or each year. No, it's something that is greatly impacting science and greatly impacted by science. And of course, policies need to keep up with that. In 10 years' time, I hope that there's more protection around, as I said, people's rights protected in this field. I definitely would like to see more information about the Data Policy Act, because if you go to schools now, all kids will tell you that they love doing TikTok dances, and they all know the TikTok dances trending, but none of them knows how those TikTok dances may become viral, and none of them know that, or maybe they do know and they want to. Yeah, they want that their TikTok dances become famous in Brazil, for example, but they don't know who will be watching those TikTok dances, and they don't know who are the masterminds behind every insidious plan that tries to hack their phones. And these kids who do the TikTok dances are like 10 years old, and they are completely unaware of all the dangers of the internet. Or maybe they are, right, because their parents informed them. But if even teachers and even in the classroom, they had more information and more education and training about that, we would certainly be not be seeing many people in the courtroom complaining regarding the misusage of public image or private image or private videos, for example. So yeah, we're talking about education, certainly on schools, and of course more dissemination on which are the dangers also around the older sphere, because I see so many, let's say boomers, but not only boomers, I see many old people, for example, also oversharing or completely unaware of dangers of the internet. They just find it fun and find it interesting. So many videos, so many pictures, complete new world of opportunities, and of course old people, older people also needs to have the certain amount of information.
Claudia's opinion reflects how the data protection of consumers must be considered by political decision makers in a closer way to society, so that these challenges in data are mitigated. As Claudia said, fight for a change in data protection. In the debate and take-home ideas on data protection, the discussion addressed two main arguments, accessibility and transparency. Regarding accessibility, it starts with educating and training the population so that they are aware of their actions when making decisions about the management of their data. Furthermore, it involves the use of user-friendly communication platforms, especially in how data policies are communicated. The second point naturally arises as a requirement for easy access, but also seeks to ensure fairness in data supervision. And unfortunately, we are running out of time and we still have more to say about our event. Don't miss the message about health literacy with Andrea and climate change with Marianne in the next episodes of this special edition. Thank you for being with us.